Welcome to Calibrate Conversations, a podcast about embracing God's standard for sexuality. I'm your host, Brady Cohn, and joining me today is Logan. What's going on today, Logan?
Well, I am here now.
So. Yes. So Logan, I met you here in Kansas City at a church I spoke at, and we sat down afterwards and had like a 90-minute heart-to-heart, and we covered all kinds of deep things, and I was really encouraged by your life and some of the things that you had wrestled with and you're really taking seriously, and the depth to which you had thought through and prayed through and wrestled through what was going on in your life. And so I really thought that you could be an encouragement to others. And so I'm really excited today to hear your story, and we can then flesh out a little bit of what it looks like to walk with God and to live inside the church and live in community while we struggle with some of these issues.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's important to kind of preface a lot of my story and background with just the fact that I grew up in a very, very masculine environment. I have six brothers and no sisters, which makes it very, very difficult to have any sort of femininity in the household, like to for that to be okay.
Yes, yeah, there's a certain mold that they're expected to fit to be a man.
Exactly. And I'm also right in the middle, so I've got the full range of experience from older and younger brothers.
So you're the forgotten middle child.
Yes. So as I was growing up, it was that masculine, hyper masculine environment. Once I came into about eighth grade, I had already had a couple of issues in terms of sexual cravings and using pornography. But I had stayed the night at a friend's house at one point, and he started to take his clothes off, and I found myself enjoying watching. And it was a really, really shaking moment for me, because, you know, I had grown up this whole time thinking, like, I'm going to marry a woman, and I'm going to have four kids, and I had already planned out a bunch of my life. I'm a really, really big planner. I think ahead 15 years at all times, and I just find it easy and comfortable to do that, because I'm very goal oriented, and I like to see things accomplished, and I know what I want. So in this moment, whenever I am suddenly struck by these desires that are completely against everything that I know, it was really frightening. So I go home that night, and I'm not really quite sure what to do. So I kept it to myself, and this was the summer of eighth grade. So I was about to go into high school, where we experience a range of new things, but it was just very, very difficult. I remember in the seventh grade, I had a friend who had come out to me as gay. He was one of my close friends, and I told him, "Titus, I love you, but I don't think that that's what God has in mind for your life." And then all of a sudden, I'm feeling this same thing myself, and I'm just like heartbroken, because I'm thinking, man, I just told him exactly what I would probably tell myself. And so I'm really, really dealing with this hypocrisy within myself of what I know to be true. I've always loved Jesus and strived after God and gone to church as much as I can. But I decided to deny him in this moment, it seemed. So I went through high school. Nobody knew for several years. It was something that I planned to take to my grave, as a lot of people think. And there were many nights a week that I would find myself, that I would cry myself to sleep, praying and asking God, please take this away. I don't want this. I know you don't want this. Please give me some reprieve from this. I will do whatever it takes. Just please take it away. And you know, that never really seemed to happen. So I get all the way to my senior year, still this consistent discontentment with the way that I am, and having these carnal desires that I don't want and trying to push them away, in the midst of struggling with pornography and going through puberty and social anxiety and all of these different things. So in my senior year, my youth pastor at the time, he had received a job offer in Indianapolis, and so he had left. So a new youth pastor was kind of put in place. He hadn't attended our church before, so I had no idea who he was. But I had the chance to meet him for only a week, and I just, in my head, I'm like, I'm just going to tell him and see what happens. So I had texted him because he had offered, he's like, if you ever need to talk about something, then like, please tell me. And so I texted him and I asked him, I'm like, can we talk? And he said, sure. He's like, do you want to come to my apartment at this time on this day? I was like, that would be awesome. Thank you. And so I had my mother drive me because I still didn't have a license by the time I was 18. But I got there and I was shaking and trembling. I walked up these stairs and I opened the door. He answered. He and his wife were there and they kind of just invited me to sit down on the couch. And once I sat down, I just started bawling and bawling for, they couldn't get me to talk for an hour.
Oh, wow.
I am sure that I freaked them out so much at this moment because I can't imagine what I would do if somebody asked to talk to me and then walked into my house and cried for an hour. I would think that they had like murdered someone. Like I feel terrible because I know there's no way he was prepared.
That's what happens when we keep a secret for so long. We build it up in our mind that it becomes so hard to let out.
Yeah.
And it snowballs. I remember some of those exact conversations in my own walk where it's been so many years. I'm so ashamed and sat there and cried before I could get the words out to someone because there's so much shame. Yeah. And you build up in your mind, how will people respond and what's going to happen? And you just don't want to say the words out loud.
Yeah, exactly. It's this guilt trap that we put ourselves into. We think that nobody will understand and nobody is going to kind of look to help us. They're just going to shame us for what we're doing, what we're thinking. I found in that moment that once I was eventually able to talk, found that it was much easier to just keep going once he had started. And it was very clear that he had not encountered this situation before. He didn't know what to say. And so the only words that I remember him saying are, Logan, we love you. And that's really all that's important. He's like, he didn't say anything about really sexuality at all. He's like, God loves you and we love you. And we need you to know that. And, that's very, very comforting. But again, I'm this goal oriented person and it's, I want
like,
solutions.
Tell me what to do. Like give me one steps, one, two, and three.
And so he has this, this kid in high school go from crying on his couch to kind of like asking what do you want me to do? What am I supposed to do? And I told him, I was like, I have prayed for years on end for some solution to this problem. And I don't think that it's because I'm not praying enough or I'm not reading the Bible enough or worshiping or tithing enough. It's like, I don't understand why I can't get this to go away. I've grown up in a church that tells me about these miraculous conversions from homosexuality to heterosexuality. It's like, why can't I have that? And he really did not, it seemed like he didn't really know what to say. And I don't at all blame him for that. It's, I don't know if I would know what to say if, somebody had asked me outright like that, but, it kind of started me down a really important journey of contentment. About a year and a half later, I attended a church, about half an hour away from where I normally was. I had spent the past 3 days doing an incredible amount of research into how the Bible views homosexuality. I had viewed all 7 clobber passages. I had constructed a 10-page Google document trying to list out the every single possible translation of these words and what these different authors think, and the meanings that they derive from each of these passages, the etymologies of of all of these words. Because again, I wanted to figure it out. I want answers. That is, I love answers. But what I found was like, I was just so discontent with all of the answers that I was finding. It wasn't necessarily that, they were clear and I was discontent with it, but it was just that, I was finding that the more I looked into it, the more confused I seemed to become about what was right. I was trying to determine, because I had seen so many people tell me that, you know, homosexuality is something that God is not against in some way. And so between my church, which is very traditional, and my the city that I live in and the school that I was in being very, very progressive, I didn't know where I was supposed to be or where I was supposed to look. So I prayed to God. I said, please give me an answer. And I, in just about an hour from then, I looked at my phone, and, on Instagram, there was a recommended post by, this young adult service, and it was inviting young adults to come there that night at 7 PM. And so I said, okay, I don't know what this is, but I'll go. I mean, it's only half an hour away. And I go, I'm pretty uncomfortable just because it's a very large church. And I know nobody there. I have no idea, you know, of what this church is really about, what denomination they are, or what their beliefs are. But I sit down in service. They do some worship songs that I've never heard before. And the service starts, and he says, tonight we're beginning a new series on marriage. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. And throughout the service, I was expecting to hear something about courting and dating and how you're supposed to interact with your spouse, how you view them, things about lust and love. But the only thing, the only message that I can remember from that night was, if you are not content in your relationship with God, you will never be content in any relationship. And I was pretty shaken. I really kind of despised that answer.
Yeah.
it was just like, the answer was, be content, stop looking for answers. Like, you already have it. And you know, I didn't appreciate that. I walked away from that service, and I met a guy in that church. And for the first time, I met somebody who was also dealing with same-sex attraction. And he talked to me that night. We talked for hours about all of the frustrations that come from this. And he was kind of just echoing exactly what the message had, just that contentment is all you need in a relationship with Christ. And I've come to learn that a lot more over the past couple of years. It's definitely been a struggle. It's very difficult to rely on God all the time and to be content with not knowing the answers. But I think that being comfortable, not knowing what the answers are always, not knowing why we deal with the struggles that we do. If you rely on God, it's a requirement. It's very difficult. But there's something very freeing about knowing, you know, I don't know the answers. I don't know what my future looks like. I don't know why this has been taken away, but I have to just trust that there's a good purpose behind this. I'd say that's a pretty, it's a summary of kind of what my journey has been. It's been all about this contentment.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that there's value in a lifelong process of discipleship in which you allow God to reveal to you maybe some of the lies that you've believed, some of the ways your heart has twisted sexuality to desire what you want to do, but also that you trust and have contentment in the moment that we are, none of us are fully sanctified on this side of the cross, and none of us will be fully healed until, you know, the other, until we're in heaven. And so it's a very big balancing act of like, man, like if God can provide me with some answers, then that's great. And if there's something I need to change in my life, if there's a lie that I've believed that I need to exchange for his truth, then I want to be open to that. But I want to have contentment in the process and be fully surrendered to God's grace and his truth and his expectations each and every day, even if I don't fully understand what's happening in my heart. And so there's all these ditches we can go in on one side or the other. And the one side says, where you naturally go is, I have to have it all figured out. And we don't trust in God and we get angry and bitter towards God. And then the other ditch we can go into is that, well, I'm going to figure nothing out. I'm just going to trust in Jesus. And we end up with a very shallow faith in which lacks depth. And we miss out on some sanctification opportunities over the course of our lifetime. But the hard road and the most fruitful road is in the middle there, where you have both, where he said, I'm going to allow God to give me understanding in his time over the course of my lifetime. And over the course of my lifetime, I might understand my own heart and my own sin more. But in the meantime, however much understanding God gives me, I'm going to have contentment with him. I'm going to trust him. I'm going to submit to him, and I'm going to fully rest in God's grace in the process. And that's a freeing road to go down. And we all have a tendency to want to take one extreme or the other, whereas there's this tension in the middle. There's this tension in the middle where it's like, God can help me figure this out a little bit, but I'm okay with if he doesn't do that right now. And so there's that tension of kind of anticipation and waiting on God and working through the process, but being content with where the process is at. And that's a lot of tension to hold, but there's also so much grace there as you go on this journey with God.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, It is certainly a fine line to walk. Something that I hadn't mentioned was that my career goals have always, like I've said, I have always been a planner. I love to plan 15 years ahead. When I was in middle school, this was in the seventh grade, I felt called to missions. And this was something that I was like, yes, this is the only time I feel like the Lord has directly spoken to me. And it was a call into missions. And within the year, I kind of ignored that and forgot about it. And I was planning on, yeah, I'm going to do my medical stuff that I had already been planning. And the reason why is because I was terrified of it. I was like, I don't want to go to a new place where I won't have my friends and family that I've always known. And the idea of not having heterosexual attraction terrified me even more, because when I finally started to accept this idea of missions, now I'm going overseas, and I'm going to be in a realm that I do not understand, with people that I do not know. I'm not surrounded by family, not surrounded by friends. But even now, it's like, I'm not going to be able to have a family the way that I had imagined it. I'm not going to have the kids that I had planned on having. It's, it felt like there was so much loss. It's I don't think it's comparable to Job in the way that it's like, I never had this.
Yeah.
But it still feels like, you know, I've had this future that I had planned out stripped away in order to make room for whatever it is that God's doing. And I, in my pride, it's really difficult for me to see. It's like, yeah, whatever God is planning, it's probably better than anything I could imagine.
Amen. But still, there's a grieving process when our dreams die. And that's where for people with same-sex attraction or who are living the gay lifestyle, who repent, there are such heavy burdens to bear. And it feels like so much death that has to happen and so much loss. And there's burdens to bear that Christians need to come alongside us and bear those burdens. Just like we all have different burdens at different levels. And these are just unique burdens that we need Christians to bear with us. And it does feel like a lot of sometimes grieving and a lot of loss of our future dreams, loss of what our expectations were, a loss of what sometimes our family or our church expected of our lives. There's a lot of levels of grieving and loss of what we wanted for our lives. And obviously following Jesus is worth it. And God's plan is so much better than anything we could have imagined, but we still need to kind of grieve and be shepherded as we work through what we're going to give up to follow Jesus.
Yeah. I think that's another one of the big factors in like how hard it is to admit some of these feelings to people, because it's like once you admit them, they become real. They become a factor of your life that you're going to have to account for. I spent those years like praying because I didn't want that to be part of my future. I didn't want that to be something that I have to deal with later on. But once I had admitted it, and the final nail sort of in this coffin of admittance was speaking to my parents about it. It's like nobody wants to talk to their parents about
Absolutely.
Sex. It's just weird a lot of the time. It's why the talking with your parents is just so difficult. It's because these are the people that you look up to and that have also been planning your life for you. They raised you for probably 18 years, and you don't want to disappoint in any way. I remember that my parents have always expected that all of us will have children. And they love the idea of a big family, like I said, 7 boys. And having to talk to them was really, it felt like I was denying them something also. I spoke to them. My mother took it okay. The first thing my dad said was in reference to Sodom and Gomorrah.
Oh, that's a great first passage to bring up.
Yeah, it certainly showed me how he felt at the moment.
Yeah.
And that makes it even harder. It's like, I have to be the good guy in so many ways. I have to demonstrate humility in the fact that I know some people aren't going to understand, but I also have to demonstrate righteousness and holiness by way of not letting myself get caught in this trap. And in another way, I have to demonstrate that I am broken and in need of healing, but I also have problems that other people think are worse than other ones. I had talked to you about this before, but thinking about how the church would deal with my sin as compared to another person's. Mm-hmm. There was a member of leadership on our young adults team, and he had been fornicating, and I spoke to our pastor. And I said, if I had even like kissed a man, I can't imagine that I would still be on leadership. I think that the level of sort of reprimand and punishment would just be so much greater than anything that anybody else could do, even though they're clearly acting in an extra biblical way. And so it's just this eggshell walk.
Absolutely.
All the time. And it's a lot of pressure to put on a person, at the age of being a teenager.
Absolutely. One time I had a season of life where I fell into sin and it was bad and I had to repent. There's consequences and I'm thankful for people who held me accountable. And I this kind of falling into sin, and months later I kissed a guy. And I did tell the wise counsel and pastors in my life what happened. But when I told them, I was actually encouraged. I was encouraged by, like, man, this guy kissed me. But I quickly stopped it. I didn't let it go any farther. And I was not enticed by it. I didn't want it. I saw where this was going to go. And I want Jesus instead. And I was really encouraged by the growth that had experienced my life and how this didn't entice me like it would have previously. But the people in my life kind of freaked out. And, you know, the thought of me kissing a guy, it's like just, it was like, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah, the world's ending. And I was so frustrated. And because it's like, you know, you don't take, you know, heterosexual guys sin nearly this seriously. And they say, well, you know, a heterosexual guy kissing a girl, it might be sin, but it might not be. But we know that when you kiss a guy, it is sin. And I was really frustrated that they weren't seeing the growth and they weren't seeing the dying to myself and they weren't celebrating with me what God was doing in my life. They could not move past the fact that I kissed a guy. And it was really, really frustrating. And I think that's a teachable moment for the church to not hold us to standards and expectations that they don't hold other people to. And some people, they need to hold to higher expectations.
Yeah.
And then there's some of us, they hold to probably too high of expectations. And we need to be able to fit in with the rest of the guys. And we already feel so ostracized. We already feel like we don't belong. Like there's no place for us in this group of men. And so we need to level the playing field a little bit and take people's sins seriously, absolutely, but take all people's sins seriously.
Hmm. Yeah, definitely. The division of sort of categories of sin is just so harmful in so many ways. It really kind of dismisses the idea of all of sin and fall short of the glory of God. It's some of sin more and some of sin less. When in reality, it's like it's just, we're all sinners. It's a level playing field.
Absolutely.
We are all at fault in some way, and we are all in need of the grace of God.
And at the heart of it, we've all twisted sexuality in some way, and we all idolize after people. It's just the object of our idolatry is different.
Yeah.
And we have different ways where our heart bends towards idolizing a person. And for some people, it's a man that they try to find their hope in, and some people it's a woman, but it's all idolatry. It's all placing this person in a place in your life where they don't belong. And there's extra burdens for people with same-sex attraction, and we need to really kind of level that playing field. And for me in my life, the most healing I had was connection with completely heterosexual men who loved me as I was, who didn't see any difference in me. Like, we're on this journey together. And one of my best friends, Tyler in Kearney, was one of those guys. And my friend Jason here in Kansas City, and my friend Toby. And there's so many of them where, you know, it feels like sometimes the only guys we can relate to are the other guys with same-sex attraction. We kind of gravitate towards, we really want community with them because they understand. And that's great. Sometimes that's helpful to have guys who understand same-sex attraction, who have been there, experienced that. But the most healing I experienced in my life was from heterosexual men who didn't see me different, who didn't treat me as different. I'm just one of the guys. And they didn't put on this macho expectation of masculinity. And they didn't see me as different, and they included me in the world of men. Mm. And those were some big healing moments.
Yeah, definitely. I think we all put a bunch of different labels, on everything that we are, and kind of, divvy everything up as, because we are all in need of like different and distinct solutions. I remember that I had once had a conversation with a couple of friends, and one of them had admitted to having this sort of sexual sin, and then another one had admitted to being a klepto. He was having trouble with this desire. Whenever he would walk into a store, he would find himself unable to control what he was doing. And he felt so alone because there was this division of what sin is and what it looks like. He had heard all sorts of things in the church about lots of different sins, like lying, cheating, stealing, and including lust. But like, the cheating part or the stealing part wasn't really anything ever expanded upon. It was never really looked at as more than just like, you know, just don't steal from a store. It's as simple as that. But but in the same way that we struggle with that we might struggle with something like sexual desire, it's so easy to struggle with literally anything else.
Absolutely. And then just want to, sometimes in the church, we just want people to control their behavior without getting to the heart of what's going on.
Right.
And so it's like, just behave in a certain way, but that doesn't lead to heart level transformation and contentment with Christ.
Yeah. It's, we know what we need to do, but how do we do it? Absolutely. How do we get there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How have you felt last couple of years as you've been a little more honest within your church and just feeling like you're included in the world of masculinity? How have you had to come to peace with your masculinity of maybe it's okay that I'm a little bit different than other guys? And so many times we don't value guys who are artistic, who are sensitive, and we look at some of those things as being feminine qualities, and we put up these false fences and boundaries to exclude some of the guys from the world of masculinity and the world of men. And that makes same-sex attraction so much worse, because then when we feel excluded by all the men, we're even more desperate to connect with them at a heart level. And it's just this downward spiral that us, that our own heart contributes to, but sometimes other men contribute to, especially Christian men. So how have you come to rest in God's grace and accepting yourself for who you are, with your talents and abilities that God gifted you with, for your personality that God gifted you with, and not putting on false expectations of what sometimes the world thinks masculinity is supposed to look like?
Yeah, I never... So I've had this conversation with a couple of people before, kind of discussing what masculinity really looks like in a guy, and what traits you kind of traditionally expect. And I've never been a particularly feminine guy. Mm-hmm. I've managed to, if you will, go under the radar.
Yeah.
For a good while. Just because I don't have anything that really stands out as being
like, when people meet you, they wouldn't think, oh, he's gay. Like, that's right, not the case at all. Right. Like, I never would have suspected that you were someone who struggled. And so we have to be careful not to use those stereotypes of it's going to be at these outward mannerisms or things we think of as gay when, you know, that's not the case. So many times we just don't know that those are the people who are struggling.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting because there's so many of those traits that are like really valuable, but we don't appreciate them when they're put into the context of a man. It's like things like even cleanliness. It's just, I've never understood why that's considered to be a quote unquote gay thing. But it's like a lot of guys are comfortable with having poor hygiene, and it's not something that I'm like crazy about. I'm not a big germaphobe, but it's simple, like being able to clean your room at the end of the day.
I never clean my room, and it's kind of a problem, but yeah, there's so qualities that we don't value as being masculine, or some we don't value men who exhibit them. They are actually a gift, that are something that is God's gift to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that I've noticed a lot is I'm certainly more feeling than I think a lot of guys would claim to be. I find myself crying much easier than a lot of guys would. And I love to listen and to relate to all kinds of people. And I don't really see, I think a big benefit of having this sort of,
sensitivity.
Yeah. This sensitivity. But also being in a place where you're, not required to exhibit masculinity or femininity explicitly means that my conversations with people are never changed on the basis of like their gender. I've never had trouble connecting with women or men really. Like it's always been just the same. Which is a really big benefit for things like ministry. It's
absolutely,
you don't require this division or another person in the same role. It's really interesting the number of different traits that we kind of dismiss because of the sexuality that we assign to them as being either straight or gay traits.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then so many times guys perpetuate a form of masculinity that I like to call faux masculinity. It's just fake masculinity of machoism. Hmm. And it's like, that's not what God calls masculinity. That's not what God calls us to. They're not accomplishing God's purposes with their masculinity.
Like
lighting stuff on fire, going outside and being dumb, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't need to go outside and pee on a rock and act all dumb with the dudes to, you know, be a man. Right. I mean, I do pee outside a lot. Sorry, that's probably too much information. My wife completely doesn't understand. I'll walk by three bathrooms to go outside and, you know, do business. And it's like, but that's not what makes me a man, you know? And so it's like, we don't have to go out and just be dumb with the guys. That's not masculinity. That's being a little boy. And it's nice to have fun, but it's like, that's not masculinity. Masculinity accomplishes something for God's purposes. Mm. It leads to human flourishing. It invests in our community and people. Gives of ourselves for others, and that can look very different than the world's version of machoism.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we confuse the two. So we should celebrate guys who are sensitive, guys who are clean and organized, guys who have talents and abilities like music and acting and theater, and just, you know, we should be celebrating those attributes in guys as part of their masculinity, not thinking that that's a feminine quality and anti-masculine.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it's accidental in the slightest that God goes by a pronoun of he and
absolutely
him. It's very clear that, like, there's intention behind that. And I think a lot of the intention is the care that a father can give, and also the leadership that, like, masculinity is supposed to entail. And I think a focus on that is what we've lost a lot of.
Absolutely. And, you know, in a culture that is so confused with gender right now, it's not that we want to blur the lines between men and women. We want accurate views of what is a man and what is a woman, and not distort them the way that the world has distorted them and the way that the church has distorted them. So we're not at all suggesting to blur the lines between men and women even more. Instead, we just need more accurate, more biblical understanding of masculinity and femininity. I can never say that word right, so I always try to avoid it. femininity. We need more accurate biblical views, not to blur the boundaries even more, but actually just have the right boundaries and not exclude men from manhood because of traits that are actually a gift to them and a gift to the church.
Yeah, absolutely. I think another thing that I have thought a lot about is how we define a lot of the things we come to understand in terms of sexuality. So something you and I talked about at one point was the differences between, like, labels of SSA and gay.
Absolutely.
Something that a more traditional evangelical church would be more accepting of is SSA, same-sex attracted, because it's separating yourself from the idea of the LGBTQ community.
Yep.
And I've wrestled a lot with how I feel about it because currently a lot of people's view of LGBTQ within the church is pretty hostile.
Yes.
It's very difficult to find somebody who's compassionate towards those groups in a more traditional church like the one I've grown up in. And so something that I've been trying to do is use the word gay in a more common way, in a casual way, in telling people how or what it is that I'm dealing with within the church, because it kind of, like, puts them on puts them on their back foot, and they don't really know what to do, because they're like, oh, does that mean this guy is like actively having sex with other men? It's like, no, nor should that even matter. It's like, that's not what the church is supposed to be really caring about when you first meet a person. It's, do you know Jesus or not?
Absolutely.
And we can get down to the details later on once you once you know who God
but
is.
Don't make assumptions about people. And we have these such polarized views of people, and we make so many assumptions, and we put them into so many categories that we hear the word gay, and we just make all these assumptions about how they're living and what they're doing. And but the word gay can mean, you know, identity. It can mean feelings and attractions, and it can mean lifestyle and behavior, you know. And I choose not to use that term. I haven't seen it be profitable, you know, and really healthy. But you're absolutely right. We need to get over making all these assumptions based on labels and identity.
And that hypocrisy, that double standard, is something that I've really been trying to focus on. It's the church's main sort of view when it comes to things like sexuality, is like, that's not your identity. Your identity is found in Christ. And it's like, you are absolutely right. So why are you focusing so much on that?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's like, if homosexuality is not your identity, then why are you focusing on that rather than trying
just
to lead them to
Jesus? Just that one aspect about me. And
yeah,
and we need to see that people are so much more than their sexuality. And that's one reason why I try not to define myself by that one area. And the church needs to not define themselves or define other people by just that one area, and see that people are so much more than their sexuality, but we tend to only care about that one area of their life.
Yeah.
You know, especially if we find out they're LGBTQ, it's like we somehow think that that's the only reason why they need Jesus. Like, no, they need Jesus for 100 reasons in their life.
Right.
And we should look for opportunities to share hope with them, and look for little windows to their soul of where they might be misplacing their hope, so we can apply gospel hope to their life.
Yeah.
And that might not be in the area of their sexuality initially, because maybe they're open to Jesus in other areas of their life first. And yeah, we need to be open and sensitive to where they might be sensitive to their need for Jesus.
Yeah, definitely. I'm currently writing a sermon on the Samaritan woman in John chapter 4 at the well. And it's just, it's so, so interesting reading into the history of all of it. So the relationships between Jews and Samaritans, it's very simply racism, to be frank. Yes. It's all about pure-bloodedness. The Samaritans are considered to be half Jew, half Gentile. And that's pretty much the only reason why there's this sort of distaste between them. And so whenever they're having their interaction, what the Samaritan woman is focusing on is like, why is this interaction even happening? And Jesus is like, you are completely missing the point. He's like, I'm the Son of God. Like, there is something so much more important lying beyond the surface of this conversation about a drink of water. And so like, he manages to sort of get under this surface, and the woman is like retorting, in kind of a sassy way. And she's like, I have no husband. And he is like, you're right, you have five. it's this mind blowing conversation where it's, Jesus is not focused on this, outer problem where, she has this role as a woman and this role as a Samaritan, and this role as having five different husbands. But like, his focus is on this idea of living water. He's like, you're not alive. Like, you have no idea what it means to be alive. And it's so important to me, because it's like, he knows what his focus is, and his focus is not, it's not anything else but like the relationship with the woman.
Absolutely. That's great. Well, Logan, I've loved hearing your story and so much wisdom, and you are a well-spoken and thoughtful and sensitive and smart, and I know that God's going to do some great things in your life, and I'm excited to continue along that journey alongside you. And I know that our paths will cross again. I know that our audience is going to be encouraged by your story and some of the insight you had to share. So thank you for sharing it. And maybe we'll see you back on here some other time.
Thanks, Brady.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us on Calibrate Conversations. And we pray that as you go out there your week, you can look at your life and you can calibrate your sexuality to God's standard, and you can embrace God's standard, and that you can show love and grace and compassion to those around you. Make sure you check out calibrateministries.com for more resources and to see how you can support the ministry. Thank you so much.